Hello and welcome to the World Supercross Review Round 1 from the UK. I'm Jonathan McCready. With me is Andy McKinstry. And Andy, we're just not long back from the first Supercross GP of the year. All in all, a good race, some good excitement, which we'll get on to shortly. But how did you find the weekend yourself?
Good to be at a Supercross race again. It's been a while. I think my last one was Paris, so yeah, good to be at a Supercross race again at football stadium, Villa Park. Nice to be able to add it onto my to-do list. So yeah, it was a good weekend.
You had a good nosy around Villa Park. What were your thoughts, Mr. Triple T here?
It was another football stadium ticked off the list. Hopefully someday they'll have build a track at Stamford Bridge. That would be even better.
I can't say it. I don't think they downgrade themselves that much. Probably
Oh,
Spurs.
behave you, don't
Spurs
grade
are the best
themselves.
stadium in the world, so they should probably go there.
Coming from a Man United fan talking about downgrading, flip me. Anyway, yes, it was good to be there. We'll not start football chat, but it could be a very long podcast if that's
So we'll
the
stay with football shortly. The reason it was on in July was because of the football season. Adam Bailey said in the press conference when I asked him why it was so early this year compared to last year, and basically the reason was that the turf for the Villa Park was going to be re-sown over the next month with the football season starting in August. So that was the reason there. They didn't have any other options, stadium options this year to bring World Supercross to the UK. So the reason it was so early, which was a bit strange initially, but the reason it was so early was because it was the only available stadium, and they basically had to take advantage of getting Supercross in a Premier League stadium or in the UK at all for 2023. So with that backdrop, added into the mix the unfortunate clash of dates really with the World Superbikes at Donington. The British Motocross was racing 4 hours away on that weekend as well. So I would imagine there was some fans from both of those events that are riders in industry, in case of the British Motocross, that would have liked to have went to World Supercross but weren't able to do it. So I was a wee bit afraid of what the crowd would be, but all in all, I know there was some complaints about the crowd for people watching on TV, but personally I thought it was pretty good. I know Dean Wilson and Max Anstey, speaking to them, they were really pleased with the level of the crowd and certainly the noise the crowd made. And I thought, all in all, given the sort of restrictions World Supercross had at getting it to the UK, the date clashes, the crowd was actually pretty good on the Saturday, and the atmosphere was really good as well.
Yeah, I mean, same as yourself. When we got to Villa Park and we sort of seen the location it was in, I wasn't sure, in terms of getting random fans that live in around the stadium, I wasn't too sure if they'd get many of them. Bit different to Cardiff in that respect, because Cardiff was right beside a city and they had the very good advertising in Cardiff with posters on pretty much every light that was in the town. So I think that would have been able to generate a lot more casual or a bit more random fans just living close by, whereas I think Villa Park probably attracted all the diehards. So I was a bit worried, but like yourself, I was happy when we got their seats. I think it was at about 5:30 for the opening ceremony, and obviously the where the football nets are, those two stadiums were empty. But in terms of the two main stadiums, there was quite a lot of people. And looking out there, maybe about 15,000 there. So considering World Superbikes is on, there's a British Motocross, maybe not the best weekend to have it, but all in all, I think I was pretty much happy. But again, it's all about expectation, I suppose, and what you were expecting before the weekend. But I think all in all, it was a pretty good job, and that, and with it being a smaller stadium, it probably didn't look as bad as Cardiff actually, even though Cardiff had like maybe C Cardiff probably had 30,000, but it actually looked, the stadium, because it's
More
so
empty.
big, looked at me, yeah, more empty. So all in all, I think it was a good job on that front. And may hopefully if that comes to the UK next year again, as you've already alluded to, it's not going to be at Villa Park, but hopefully they can get bigger crowd numbers as well.
And the stadium itself is quite an old football ground where the stands are close to the pitch. And when we were down doing on the track walk, you could feel how close the stands were onto the course. So I think that would have felt pretty cool for the riders. The one disadvantage of Villa Park, unfortunately, they got lucky with the weather, was no roof. I think going forward, if there's going to be a ground or a stadium perfect for Supercross in the UK, it's probably still going to be Cardiff, just because of that roof. I think the series is going to be run more from August to November, and therefore that kind of rules out most Premier League grounds with the football season going on. But again, the weather even in the summer, and the UK isn't usually fantastic. So Cardiff, if you're gonna have a UK ground hosting a World Supercross event, it's probably gonna have to be Cardiff, and it's just trying to fit in a date there that suits between the likes of the Six Nations and that. But as you say, that there was more probably city central situation with Cardiff that was good. Villa Park, you're a lot more on the outskirts of Birmingham there, so you weren't in the city centre at all, whereas Cardiff is slap bang in the middle of the city centre, lots of restaurants and everything for people to go to as well. But I think there still was new fans to the sport going across social media. A lot of people that were there that had never been before, didn't know anything about the sport, really enjoyed it. And I think that brings us to the first point of World Supercross, and that's what it can do. And in some ways, it's actually promoting AMA Supercross around the world. Outdoor motocross just doesn't have the ability to take dirt bikes to the cities. You have to go to the race to see it, where Supercross is kind of on your doorstep. Was bringing new fans to the sport. So in that way, it's very, very important for me that this race series succeeds, even if there is a bit of backlash from America. I think Chad Reed put it quite well. America's trying to protect America, and that's their right to do so. But in nearly the bigger picture, the World Supercross series is actually promoting the riders of American Supercross in a lot of ways. So it's almost a dual promotion for the World Supercross when it works. And at Villa Park, I think we did have new fans there. Ken Roczen, he was the star. I mean, the queue for his autograph was about five times as much, at least, than anyone else. They were actually queuing during the
Nearly
SX2 signing to wait for
out the
him
road.
to come out for the SX1 series. Yeah, they were nearly out the road onto the end of the gates onto the main road there. So whenever you have a rider like that, I've been able to globally market the sport essentially, I think it's going to be really valuable for the series in the future. But it does show the how valuable World Supercross can be if they can get this series off the ground. I do think the depth was better this year than Cardiff. You had the likes of Cole Nicholls, Cole Seeley stepped up to the 450 class. You had Justin Hill, who was very fast, his first race on the Bud Kawasaki. Vince Freeze, Justin Brayton, and all was back. But I think you missed the Marvin Musquin, Chase Sexton, Lawrence Brothers, Cooper Webb level, and if you'd one or two more of those guys to really run against rocks, and I think that's going to bring the longevity of the championship higher and higher. But there's a bit of controversy, but interest in the format, the three short motos. But I think for new fans, and even for us, it's very sharp, fast racing. And you aren't going to get a runaway, really, even if Ken Roczen's there, as he was at Villa Park in a class of his own. He actually lost the second heat to Vince Freeze, although subsequently they both got docked points, which was slightly confusing and one of the kind of downsides of it. That wasn't really evident until the end of the third main event, which caused a bit of confusion on the podium. But even with Ken Roczen being that far ahead, you still saw plenty of on-track action. Four race starts, essentially, with a heat race. Super pole that Justin Hill won by a tenth of a second, so it shows Justin Hill has got a lot of potential this year. But Roczen, he kind of thrilled the crowd. Probably a good thing for us that he got bad starts, not for him, but the way he was able to slice through the field, I think anyone that was there and saw him ride won't forget that sort of moment of how he's able to come through the field, how good he looks, and how fast he looks. But I think that was enhanced by having those three different races where he had to work a bit harder.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the format point of view, I actually quite like the format. I think I quite like the idea of having the three races back to back, and it's all quite quick. I would just like an extra couple of laps for each
Yeah.
main, maybe, and then a little bit more time in between, because especially for SX2, I think their first two races are six laps. I mean, it was 4 minutes,
4 minutes,
even instead of six laps, if you'd done 5 minutes, that would probably be an extra couple of laps. So maybe go for minutes instead of the laps approach, maybe would be better. But all in all, I quite like the format. I have to say, I do think the racing at Cardiff was maybe a bit more chaotic last year, but I mean, it was the same format, and that's nothing to do with the organization. Sometimes the racing just doesn't go like that. But all in all, it was still a good event, and like you say, Ken Roczen, he was just on another level. I mean, that third main event, I think he started fifth or sixth, and he was leading on a lap and a half, and it's a 40-second lap time. So it took him about a minute to pass six riders, and
60
no one
seconds.
else could. Yeah, no one else could really make passes on the track. So I think that just shows how special he was and how much of a level he was ahead. But hopefully the others have a bit of time now to try and close down the gap. And who knows, at a different track, things could be different if he does get a bad start.
So we'll start with Roczen, obviously dominated on speed. I think everyone could see that. But Vince Freeze took that second race in the press conference and said, with Ken Roczen sitting next to him, except Joey Savacci was in the middle, which might have been a good thing. Vince Freeze said that he showed that Ken could be beat and that he expects to be able to beat him. Well, there's no reason he can't beat him in the upcoming rounds. Now, this was quite hilarious in the moment because Roczen kind of sat back in his chair. He was trying not to show his emotions, but he was fidgeting a bit, and you could tell he was a bit shocked that Freeze had the gall to say that. But Vince didn't stop there, said he's practicing with Cole Seeley, and the Cole Seeley can go as fast as anyone in the world. And Ken Roczen knows that, and he kind of kept rubbing it in to Ken Roczen. At least that's how it felt. It got to the point that it was that ridiculous that Joey Savacci was laughing or smirking in the middle and looking across at Ken. And Ken eventually couldn't take it anymore, leaned across and said that Vince had rode well and good job. But I think it was more slightly a way to try and calm himself down because he was listening to Vince Freeze say things that I think most people thought weren't the most realistic. But you got to hand it to Vince. He did ride really, really well. He's coming back off injury. Now, he thinks he maybe had the speed of Roczen or was close. He didn't really, but what he did have was great starts, and he had strong speed relative to the other guys. But Ken Roczen was still on a different planet, and I think for everyone else, it's about can you actually close that gap? And if his starts aren't better by the next one, can you take more advantage of Ken not getting out of the gate? But Vince certainly doesn't lack confidence, and it was quite an entertaining scenario within the press conference at the end.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, though, because I interviewed Vince after it, and he actually didn't say anything like that, anything ridiculous.
Really, right.
I think it's tactics to try and, you know, get into Ken's head and then try and rattle him, because Ken would forget what he said and, you know, trying to get him rattled at the track. If you can't beat them on the track, why not have tactics? Like that's part of the game. But yeah, it was it's fascinating to say the least. But yeah, fair play to Vince. I think it was his first race back, actually. And to get on the podium is a good start for a season, so it'll be interesting. But as you say, starts are very, very important, especially with that format of racing. And Vince is a good starter, so he's certainly ready to fight at the front, that's for sure.
And we saw in the last moto, Roczen tried to pass him on the outside, going through the whoops, and Vince took him right to the tough blocks. Roczen was pretty decisive then straight after he came over that wee jump across the start straight, and he kind of went left slightly and made sure Vince had to shut off or else he was going to end up in the mechanics area. So already there was a bit of, don't you dare try to mess with me. We know what happened between Justin Brayton and Vince Freeze last year. So I think the rest of the riders are a bit wary of Vince, at least on the track, because as you say, off the track, even in that press conference, he comes across as a really almost placid, very nice guy. But when the helmet goes on or he's in competition mode, as we saw with his comments with Roczen sitting there, he's maybe a different animal. But it was certainly interesting to watch. And Vince has already had a bit of a shove on track at Roczen already. So Roczen might have to, and the other riders might have to watch out going around the rest of these rounds. But for fans, Vince Freeze certainly adds a lot of excitement because you're not quite sure what's going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. He's not afraid to get stuck in anyway. Why not? It makes the racing good. And yeah, it's going to be still a lot of racing left in this championship now. And probably the break might actually be quite good for Vince because obviously it was his first race back. He obviously could do with more racing because that's the best way to learn. But even still, he got the rust. He actually told me he was quite nervous and he never really gets nervous. So at least he's got that one out of the way now. Keep working at the practice track and try and close that gap down. Who knows? Who knows what can happen? As we've seen, obviously there was only two rounds of the World Supercross Series last year, but like we've seen in Australia, anything can happen. Ken Roczen was pretty dominant in the series and almost didn't win it with one issue with I think it was the wheel, wasn't it? So anything can happen, and especially this format, it's pretty chaotic, and who knows what's around the corner.
I was so Vince Freeze at a certain corner. It was actually the corner after where Michael Lessie crashed, the left-hander. He crashed there in practice, I think. He
twice,
crashed
I think.
twice in a row, like consecutive laps, and then he crashed there in the race while leading the Letroux and when he was coming through the field, and then he had a couple more crashes, so he wasn't quite able to stay off the ground. But it was quite comical at one point to see if he took the exact same line in tight, lost the front wheel in consecutive laps. So again, you're alluding to he's just back from a long injury layoff, and those are probably the things that he'll be able to brush up on going into the next few rounds. We mentioned Michael Lacy there. We'll come to that later, but obviously that was a huge issue with the red flags or lack of. But before we go there, just to finish off the World Supercross class, Joey Savacci, second overall. He was more consistent rather than spectacular, and he said that himself after, both to me in an interview and in the press conference. I don't think he's totally happy with his riding. We saw what he could do last year in World Supercross, again in AMS Supercross. But I think second overall, he's actually really well positioned now to push forward, and probably one of the closest guys to Ken Roczen. I think the third moto he was maybe one of his best rides. And Justin Hill, he has the raw speed, I think we saw in the Super Pole. We thought maybe in the race as Roczen did start behind him, he could maybe have pushed Ken more. He wasn't quite there to go with Ken even for a lap or two yet. But I think the potential's there. Obviously, he switched teams, he switched bikes, he switched brands. And it's his first time doing World Supercross as well with these three quick back-to-back races. So I'm sure he's gained a lot of information on all levels, and he's probably going to get better. Justin Brayton looked a bit rusty to me, but on the other hand, Dean Wilson looked, it was his first time on the Honda a year or almost a year ago at Cardiff. This year, he looked really at ease on the bike. He wasn't getting the greatest starts, but he was moving forward. Dean actually on another day with maybe better starts could have been on the podium. I think he was fifth overall, but he was probably fourth overall until those penalties came in and mixed the results up a bit. So Wilson really good on for the home crowd. He got a third in the last one. So the Colt Nichols, I think we're going to see more from him as well. He was kind of stuck battling, but I think the big thing there was the depth within that top 10 was really strong this year for the 450s, and a pretty big improvement over last year where you maybe the top five, six were good. I think now you've got about 10. It's just maybe getting those extra elite guys, which should help with the battles with Ken Roczen, but also help with getting fans into the stadium as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, I think you're right on the depth. It is deeper, but then last year you had Eli v. Ken, so it
Yeah,
didn't
that
really
was,
matter as much
yeah.
about the depth, you know. So you sort of need one, at least one other guy on Ken's level. But I would say next year there is talk that Marvin Musquin could do it, so he could just be the guy, and they'll probably try and get a few others. But that's a long way away, and we don't really know what's around the corner. But we'll have to remember this is the third World Supercross race ever, so I think considering it's only the third round they've ever had, it's not a bad lineup, and it's definitely more stacked than at the end of the actual AMS Supercross season, which had a lot of injuries. So
Yeah.
I think they just need to build it up in steps and go from there. But they've already got Ken Roczen tied down for another 2 years after this one, so they'll be hoping to keep attracting the stars as the get to more countries and more continents, as we're going to see this year.
And speaking to Chad Reed, he said 99% of the riders, I think he meant in America, want to be Supercross only. There was rumors Cooper Webb is trying to do World Supercross this year, and you've already mentioned Marvin Musquin, it would suit. Who knows what Eli Tomac's going to do in the future as well. But I think if the riders are watching this series in 2023, there's a good chance that at least one or two of them might then, as you say, do the series in 2024. And I think that's probably what World Supercross are hoping, that these sort of barriers that America and the manufacturers not directly supporting World Supercross yet, that will maybe drop, or at least the riders will try to sign contracts that allows them to ride MS Supercross and World Supercross, similar to what Ken's doing this year. We'll have the extra addition of potentially maybe Ducati coming in. We know there was interest from the higher ups in Ducati this year, and they were actually at the race. So it'll be, we know they're going to MXGP and AMA probably 2025, I think, not next year, or have you heard?
So yeah, I think they're going to do selected MXGP in 2024, and along with the Italian Championship, and then I think in 2025 full time MXGP, and then probably America in 2026, 2027, around that. So probably not World Supercross anytime in the near future, but I would say if they're there, they've obviously got an interest in the future. Perhaps they could use that to springboard going to AMA Supercross, who knows? But I would certainly think probably not before 2025 at the earliest, probably.
Yeah, so they've seen it. The head guys at Ducati have seen what World Supercross is, and even that for World Supercross is a big draw. To know that a company that big with that heritage and road racing are aware of and interested to get to that to Villa Park, to see what it's like on the ground, see a rider of Ken Roczen's level, see what it's going to take, see how it all works. And for me, this is where World Supercross is something very unique. America has the Supercross bringing it to the cities. You have MXGP that has motocross going all around the world. So you've the global and the national on a big market in the US. But World Supercross brings you to those big international cities that AMS Supercross can't. It brings you to cities across the world that GP motocross can't. So it has a very unique pulling power for manufacturers. And if we see the likes of Ducati, potentially Triumph coming in there as well, that could change the game as well for the rest of the manufacturers who might actually have to then come on board because they're seeing a chance for big marketing purposes within places like Singapore, Abu Dhabi, Australia, the UK. I mean, Motocross Grand Prix at Manorley is going to be a different crowd to somewhere at Villa Park or Cardiff, at least from new fans and brand awareness. So I think those three series have the potential to be the big three in the future, obviously along with the AMA Motocross. So I think brand wise, if they can navigate the first couple of years here and really build it, I think World Supercross is going to join MXGP and Supercross as the big series of off-road motorcycling.
Yeah, well, that's certainly going to be the hope from World Supercross's point of view. Obviously, in America, they've created SMX to throw a bit of a spanner in the works. I think if it hadn't been for America creating that championship to end off their motocross and supercross seasons, it could have happened a lot quicker. But that's maybe through a spanner in the works for World Supercross's point of view. But yeah, I mean, if an AMA rider signs with one of the teams already doing World Supercross, that's going to be the solution for everyone, really. But if a Cooper Webb, for example, signs with Star Yamaha, it's going to be interesting to see what he does, because obviously at the moment the factory teams in America aren't behind World Supercross, so it'll be interesting to see if A, Cooper Webb fights to do World Supercross, and if he does, B, if Star Yamaha will allow him to go Supercross only and just do AMS Supercross and then World Supercross. But that's going to be the key point, really. So it's an exciting future, though, I think, and it's certainly Supercross going global, as you say, brings it to new audience, brings it to new continents, and brings it to new countries, which is definitely good for the sport, because people that have never seen it before are there, and they can experience it firsthand. Not everyone can get on a flight and go to America and watch it.
Exactly, it's pretty expensive. And I think for the AMA National side, there's still going to be enough riders to go around to have AMA Supercross, World Supercross, and AMA Motocross. Enough good riders in all three to excite the fans. So we'll move on to SX2, and it was almost Max Anstey's dream scenario. He almost won the British GP. He did win I think, a heat and a main event, one of the main events. There's that many races whenever you think back, it all kind of
Hard to
jumbles
keep
into
up.
one. Yeah, there's a lot of action going on in a short space of time. But I think that pass, he tried to make the pass and shot on Shane McElrath going into the whoops. If he'd got that right, I think he wins the GP. But unfortunately, it didn't quite go for him. And Enzo Lopes actually ended up passing him. And he was a story within itself. He dislocated his shoulder on the third lap of first warm-up practice. It wasn't even the qualifying session. Went back with his arm hanging down, came back out for the next practice as if nothing had happened. And he was very fast in the night show. Didn't quite get the starts, except for that, I think maybe that second or third race. And he was right there as well. So Anstey and McElrath are going to have some competition with Enzo Lopes, I think, for the next few rounds, especially if he can get off the gate. But Anstey was probably slightly regretting the fact he couldn't win his home GP there, but he couldn't have really got any closer. And Shane McElrath, he looks like a different rider on a 250. obviously this year in 450s, he didn't really look himself. I saw him at Tampa, and personally, it looks like he's riding around more than racing. But at Villa Park, he was racing, and some great tactical maneuvers as well. When he did get past, he was able to counter straight away. He was completely at home in the Yamaha, and he's probably just about still the guy to beat, but I think it's him, Vianste, and you have to count Lopes in there as well. 250 class is pretty exciting and pretty deep as well, especially no one can really age out or anything like that, or the way they have it in America where you can point out. It's guys that would maybe have no rides in America, like Justin Bogle and all back as well. So it's an interesting mix and quite a unique series for SX2, and it certainly delivers whenever it comes to the racing.
Absolutely. It was very good race in SX2, actually. Maybe not as chaotic as Cardiff was, because it was quite up and down. But I think, as you pointed out, there was three main guys this year. And McElrath pretty much won the title last year through consistency. So I think he'll be happy to win two out of the three main events this year and win the overall in style, to speak. And he's very, very good in that third main event. Lenzo Lopes sort of passed him twice, but it was like he had wing mirrors and just knew exactly what was, he read him like a book and knew what was coming, yeah. And was able to get back in the lead. So very, very impressive, and impressive race strategy from McElrath. But, and obviously Anstey, perhaps maybe the quickest, but just the starts weren't quite there. But the one time he got the start, at least he was able to win the main. And I think he was maybe just a little bit too eager in that last main event. But you can understand that, racing at home, he really wanted to get the job done. But not to be, but he's still certainly in this championship fight. But for me, Enzo Lopes is the one that they're going to have to watch, because he obviously dislocated his shoulder. Things were looking bad at the start of the weekend, and he ended up on the podium, which, after, if you told him that when he was walking back to pits after he dislocated his shoulder, I'm sure to take your hand off. So very, very impressive from Enzo Lopes, and he's got time now to recover from this as well. And then the other guy who didn't really do anything at Villa Park, but I wouldn't completely count Chris Blows out either. He was very good last year, but just I think he got in a few start crashes and stuff this year. But in terms of speed, I think he'll be knocking on the door as well.
Yeah, I think he was the one that actually collided with the Lacy that caused the stoppage. Now, we saw that happening. We saw Lacy was clearly unconscious. You didn't know how badly he was hurt, but you just knew he wasn't moving. No red flag. They came around the first lap back into that section, and it was Anstey versus McElrath. McElrath leading, Anstey in second. At that point, Anstey seemed to have the momentum. Whenever he made the move in McElrath, it was the restart, and it looked like McElrath had kind of got himself together. Anstey lost a bit of the rhythm once he made that mistake. But at that point, Anstey was all over McElrath, and they actually came into that section where Alessi was ready to jump it, and it was only at the last minute they sort of had flags to kind of had the case, I think, if I remember rightly, the first double, and then roll the rest across Alessi. At that point, you thought surely they'll get a red flag. No red flag visible. I don't know if they didn't have red flags or what, miscommunication or what was happening. But Alessi still hadn't moved, clearly still unconscious. Another 3 to 4 laps, and that whole section, every lap, the riders were having to roll it and ride within a foot of Max Anstey, probably fully aware. I think at least McElrath spoke to you in the interview I read and said he could see him lying there. Anstey was, when I spoke to him, was a bit puzzled at what was going on as well. So it wasn't easy for the riders to have to ride past that every lap and then try to go in back to race mode, going into the left-hand corner after Mike was lying there unconscious. 4 laps it took before the red flag to go out. I don't even know if you've seen a red flag even at that point, did you? It was just the race was stopped and then they relined them back up again. There wasn't a lot of red flags around about the circuit. There was a lot of red cross flags, yellow flags, marshals, and even for the medical safety point of view, they were trying to work on Max or Mike, and it was 4 laps, so you're about 4 minutes of complete and utter confusion and bafflement as to why nothing was being done. They didn't restart the race in terms of a start line. They did it the way they do in America, one rider behind the other, which I think, especially for World Supercross and the way the start is, was fair enough. It allowed Anstey and McElrath to get back to that battle with Lopes. But fortunately, the heels of the hunt is Mike was okay, aside from a pretty brutal concussion, I'm sure. But we seen him, he was walking in the pits after, and Tony said he just had the concussion and no other injuries. So a bit of a blessing that way. because it looked scarily bad. And when you don't know what's happening, but he's just not moving, and there's no red flag, it was a pretty crazy situation to witness.
Absolutely. A lot of people are being negative with World Supercross and how it's being run and all that there. And for me, actually, the way I actually think what they're trying to do is really good and bring Supercross all around the world, and they've got a pretty good lineup, so I don't have any issues with that. But for me, they needed to have that race red flag. I could have maybe understand letting them ride around another lap, but the fact it was four laps and then the red flag that they had the staggered start. They should have had that red flag out after. I mean, everyone in media was shouting, "Where's the red flag? Where's the red flag?" So it was clear to us. So it should be clear to them, and obviously for Mike's safety, but not only him. As you say, the two medics working around him, there wasn't much room there, and it was pretty dangerous.
No.
So and obviously it was a staggered start after four laps. So I think it was six laps left when they started. I don't wonder what they would have done if they brought the red flag out after a lap if it had been a full restart or a staggered start. Probably should have red flagged it after the first lap and then just done a complete restart, because the four laps they did get, that whole section, say 10 seconds, that's just riding around. So it kind of messed that race up as well in the process of the main important thing, Mike's safety, because it was scary watching him just sitting there and not moving. But it was a nice touch whenever he was getting stretchered off, and he put his thumb up to the fans, and the fans, that maybe possibly the loudest cheer of the night.
I think it
So that
was,
was a
yeah.
nice touch, and thank goodness he was okay. That's the main thing. But everyone makes mistakes, and hopefully they can learn from this for the future. And the next time something like this happens again, that they do get the red flags out immediately, because that was pretty scary. So it was.
Yeah, just from every point of view, really. I think that sure they're going to have a debrief themselves and work on that. I think they have an interview with Lewis Phillips and Vital MX coming out to sort of discuss that as well. So it'll be interesting to see their version. One thing I think you can say about Australians and Adam Bailey and especially Chad Reed is they're all very honest. So they will give you the truth and they will try and improve on that. So I think that's one thing the World Supercross Series has going for them. The organizers are trying to do the best they can. Adam actually described it as trying to build the plane while he's flying it. So in the press conference at the start of the weekend. So I don't think this is one of the things they probably foreseen. We did see a lot of debate, questioning at the riders' meeting on the start line actually, and some of it was about where to double, can you double on a certain flag and when can you restart your race pace, or do you still have to single over jumps? So there was discussion with that. Chad Reed was involved in that as well. His general consultancy role was pretty evident to us, at least the bits we were able to observe. He was on the microphone, he was giving insight. He was at the top of the table on the press conference at the first start of the weekend. In the last press conference at the end of the weekend, he was in one of the media seats asking questions, saying about how Ken Roczen looked as good as he'd seen him in a while in the whoops. So Chad's doing everything. He's kind of involved everywhere. He's got eyes on everything and talking to all the riders and teams. So I think he'll be a big asset, especially in this sort of situation, to advise people. But I think they do have the right people there to get it right. The only other thing that was slightly baffling in terms of no real explanation was after the first two 250 Supercross heats, there was a 15 or 20 minute gap or delay until the 450 class. The 450 heat one was down on the line while the last 250 heat was finishing up. And then the riders were there so long they started getting off the bike and doing warm-ups to keep the blood flowing ahead of the heat. There was no real communication that I could hear, or maybe you could hear through the microphones, the commentators as to why this was. Now, once it got going again, the event I think ran perfectly aside from the Alesi incident, which delayed probably by 15 minutes or so. But all in all, you're going to have teething problems. The red flag was something I think that I can't see happening again. I'm sure they're going to get this resolved pretty quickly in terms of logistics and what to do in those emergency situations. But all in all, I think the race was ran really well. There's a lot of on-track action for the fans to see. That you're getting to see the likes of Roczen and the likes of Anstey McIlrath, the top guys, out quite a lot. And the World Supercross class has that Super Pole, so they've essentially four races, four starts, plus Super Pole for World Supercross. So when it comes to value for money, I think World Supercross have that right. And all in all, it was very good. You're going to have those sort of teething problems, but I think as an event, Maybe they would have wanted a few more fans there, but you have to take that under the circumstances of what the dates gave and the clash of dates and the actual atmosphere when Wilson, Roxon, and Anthony came into the stadium for opening ceremonies and Anthony won his race. Roxon was winning his race, or if there's any close battles, you could really hear the crowd cheer, and I think that the riders could hear that as well. So for what they had to deal with, I think the first round, you have to say, was it was a pretty good success.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, bar that red flag incident, it sort of put a dampener on it. Aside from that, yeah, it ran well. And like you said, the break between the first WSX heat, like you don't even mind if there's breaks, things go wrong sometimes, but just tell the fans so they know what's going on. I think that was something to do with the live stream. So I think that's why there
Possibly.
was a delay to get that going. And then once that got going, the start, but they should have just told the people in the stadium so they knew what was going on. But yeah, as you said, teething issues along the way. But I think considering this is only their third WSX event and only two of which have been outside Australia, I think you have to say they're doing a very
Yeah.
good job on that front. And hopefully they can improve and get better because you can always do that and build for the future. And hopefully in 5, 6 years' time, they're coming back to these stadiums in the UK and they're able to fill them. I think that would be the
Yeah.
ultimate goal and the dream if you were to ask them. So fingers crossed we can get to that level. It's not going to happen in a year or two, but hopefully long term we can get there.
The only other strange thing was all the fireworks and everything on open ceremonies, which
During the
five, six
day.
o'clock during the day was slightly strange.
Yeah, it was.
You kind of expect that for practice the daytime, obviously, during a regular Supercross, but you do miss that sort of show atmospheric situation of the night show. And maybe if they don't often wish this, but if it got dark a bit earlier, the main events maybe would have been dark. It was starting to go a bit, so you could sort of feed the lights on by the main event times. But certainly the opening ceremony still worked by the way. But it was just a bit strange when you're used to having the dark night with the floodlights. That's kind of really what says Supercross. But I think that was just a kind of strange scenario with the dates, as we said before. And you'd imagine anything from the end of August down, you're going to have that full Supercross experience going forward, and hopefully that will include the UK as well.
Yeah, I actually didn't mind the opening ceremony because it was something different. Because you are
Yeah, it
usually,
was something
yeah,
different.
it was something different. Yeah, definitely was.
And great for the fans. They've actually done quite a good job this year. They introduced all the riders via their teams. So at different points in the track, they had the MCR team, they had the CDR Yamaha team, Bud Kawasaki, all dotted around the track, all coming out pretty quickly. And then they had Dean Wilson, Max Anstey, Ken Roczen, sort of the last three, I think, maybe Savatgy or someone as well there, coming down and individually into the stadium. So the opening ceremonies was actually done quite well. I thought it sort of gave the fans a good look at all the riders and all the bikes. So in terms of that, yet again, something pretty positive. So overall, the event was really, really good, especially under the context of what they had to deal with coming in. The only thing now is they can't really feed off the momentum of that because the French round was postponed, and I think it's the end of September, or is it October for the German GP, or is it one end of September?
I think it's
But it's
Singapore, Hank's next.
Singapore next, so
Yeah.
you're going to have 2, 3 months of
10 weeks.
inactivity just when you're getting sort of the bug for World Supercross. But maybe it allows everyone time, the riders, to get used to, especially the ones with new bikes, Bud Kawasaki, Justin Hill, and the likes of that. And also the organizers, just to put the finer points into play. But certainly going to Singapore, Abu Dhabi, Australia, UK, Germany for Ken Roczen, that's going to be loud. They're sort of hitting good markets. I think they're going to Canada as well, actually. So it'll be in, I think, maybe 6 to 8 rounds is what they're potentially looking at, maybe 8 going forward. So if they can build these stadiums and these countries into sort of iconic Supercross venues in the autumn, I think it should be good going forward. And certainly the foundation is there. They've got a lot of things right already, which I don't think should go underestimated. As you said, it's only their second non-Australian Grand Prix, really, in Supercross terms. And I think they've actually done a really good job. The pit setup is really good. I actually used the Aston Villa Academy training centre, and there was lots of room for the riders. The riders could also go in behind screens to get ready for the races and all that sort of stuff. I think a lot of the riders were jet lagged, actually, and they were trying to recover. Even Roczen said he was worse on the race day than he was in the previous 3 days. And Dean Wilson was yawning away in the press conference on the Friday. So I think riders struggled with that a bit. But the pit setup was really good as well. So a lot of things they got right. And I'm sure they're only going to get better from here.
Yeah, absolutely. Fingers crossed. And hopefully the UK is back on the calendar next year. We've already been lucky enough to have the two at the events to happen outside Australia. So hopefully there's a third one happening next year. Fingers crossed. And obviously with France being postponed, I think that is a bit disappointment because obviously when you look to Europe, France is probably the big supercross country. Yeah. And obviously the Bercy and Paris Supercross over the years get a big crowd. So you'd think there is a crowd there to be had over there. So hopefully they can get France back in the calendar in 2024 as well.
So it was a busy weekend. There was a lot going on. We actually were watching the motocross on our press seats at the exact same time of trying to watch World Supercross. Very busy time, but also the MXGP both mornings, Saturday and Sunday. So there was a lot of other racing going on as well as the World Supercross. MM Motocross, I think the big story wasn't Jet Lawrence, even though he went 1-1 again. Chase Sexton was back, but he's not quite ready to go Jet Lawrence speed. And again, he was just style and smooth. It's pretty much Stefan Everts riding out there. So he's won 10 in a row. I don't know if he'll go undefeated. I think Sexton might get one, or if Ken Roczen comes back, he might be, or who knows, potentially Jeffrey Hurlings will go over at the end of the year. So maybe he'll have some extra competition here and there, but certainly he's the dominant guy there. It was really the 250s that had the story. Hayden Deegan won his first ever overall, but partly because Hunter Lawrence went down big time after dominating race one and a first turn crash in race two. And it looked like he was hurt, as in a broken wrist, the way he was favouring his arm or hand or some sort of injury, and his championship was maybe over. Today, he's announced, or late last night, that he's going to be riding Southwick, and it looks like he's actually got away with what could have been a pretty unlucky crash with disastrous consequences. So 11 points between him and Deegan. The championship's pretty much on now. Deegan's been given a ray of hope.
Yeah, absolutely. We're five rounds in the AMA National now, and American has finally won an overall. So congratulations to Hayden Deegan.
On the 4th of July weekend.
Yeah, there you go. Maybe it was just meant to happen. But yeah, Deegan's been knocking on the door. He's been very, very impressive. Obviously, coming off a really good Supercross season. But the way he was in motocross last year, we weren't quite sure if he would be quite the same as he is in motocross or Supercross. And obviously motocross is more depth as well, because the classes aren't split. So he's sort of really come in, picked it off from Supercross, which is great to see, and very good for America, because he's their next big thing, you would have to say, their next big hope to try and fill the boots of the riders in the past, like Ram Villopoto and Eli Tomac. So the first win that he'll be hoping of many, and I'm sure he can, especially if he doesn't win the title this year, he'll certainly be a big, big threat next year. And sure. Yeah, thank goodness Hunter is okay. Yeah. He's got away with one there, I think, to not be injured. You're sort of fearing the worst after that. So at least he'll be able to come back in Southwick now. And this will, even though it's not good for Hunter, this might actually add a bit of excitement in the championship chase now. But I have to say, if he gets good starts like he did in Moto1, he's going to be very, very hard to beat.
And Tom Vial, if you just counted the second motos, he's a title contender. Unfortunately, you have to count first motos and the double DNF in Colorado. I'm still slightly frustrated he wasn't coming in more prepared, when though he had to change from air suspension to spring suspension in America. It looked like he didn't have very much testing. I don't know whether that was his choice, KTM's choice, to concentrate in Supercross. But obviously he doesn't have much time on the morning of the each race to learn the tracks. It looks like he's figuring things out in the first motos. By the second moto, he's there. He's maybe not quite the speed of Hunter just yet, although last weekend at High Point, he actually was catching Hunter at one point. So I think we're getting closer to seeing the 2022 version of Vial. And when we do, I think he'll be winning races. Certainly Red Buddy caught and passed Deegan there at the end. And was even catching Levi Kitchen. I think he can win a moto, maybe even a round this year now. But it's all dependent if he's the bike setup that suits him in practice. He can learn the track and then actually deliver on the first moto. Rider DeFrancesco didn't really help him this week in Red, but he actually had a good start. It looks like he was finally going to get a first moto. He sort of jumped across him as Vial tried to jump on the inside. And then Tom crashed again, so there weren't any chance of a decent first moto yet again for Tom Vial. He's pretty topsy turvy, but I think his time's coming. Although with the speed and motivation Hunter and Deegan are gonna have now for the title, you could see them up in the pace as well. So it could be a pretty exciting last half of the series.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in fairness to him, he was having a good first moto for a
He
change at
was, yeah.
Red Bull, but two crashes. Unlucky just with the first one, I think. And we didn't actually see what happened in the second one. I don't think the TV coverage caught that one. So, yeah, I mean, at least even though the result wasn't good in the first moto, I think, unlike the other rounds, the speed was actually good for the first moto. And I think he's probably going to be helped by a softer kind of track. Obviously, he's got a lot of sand experience racing the GPs and practicing at Lommel and in the Netherlands quite a lot. So I think these softer tracks maybe means he'll be able to adapt a bit quicker, and we should see him hopefully faster in the first motos from this point onwards, hopefully. And especially with Southwick coming, if there is a track that he could potentially win at, although I think he needs to get on the podium before he thinks about winning, because
Yeah, step by step.
he's loving these fourth overalls, isn't he? It would remind you of Ben Watson, I think, in his
Yeah.
last year in MX2, fourth every week nearly. And Tom Vial sort of doing the same. But yeah, if he can get in the podium, and if there is one track that he has is to watch out for him for, it could be Southwick if it gets lovely and rough and there's loads of bumps. So you want to keep an eye on. But like you say, Hayden, Hunter, and Tom could be the big three as the season continues. Although I think we do have to give a shout out to Levi Kitchen, who I would say
Oh,
is
summer ride, yeah.
very random
Fair
rider.
on.
He can either finish 11th or he can win it, and you're never really that surprised. But I think if he rides it, he can every week in that second moto, he'll certainly be there or thereabouts every moto. But I think that's his issue, he can't ride like that every week. So it'll be interesting to see if that gives him the confidence now.
And moving over to MXGP, a lot of different things happening there. MX2 going in was the storyline with the championship basically to four, five, six riders, but Iago Gerts has maybe grabbed back the momentum there, even though he's still 40 odd points behind Adamo. Three dominating wins, basically just a month or 5 weeks after breaking his wrist. Pretty impressive stuff. Lucas Koenen, however, he'll be disappointed. He'd won five of the last six motos, and then he went and got a stomach bug, as did his brother Sasha, as did Thibaut Benistone. So Koenen couldn't show his speed that he'd showed previously. Gerts kind of grabbed that momentum back. Everts was good, but not quite the level he was before. So Adamo did a good salvage job, but he's got to be thinking, if Iago Gerts is back, I'm going to have to step up the pace even more, because at the minute, it could come down to those two. We'll have to see.
Yeah, exactly. MX2 is really, really exciting all season. It's probably been the best racing out of any championship anywhere. So really, really good. And yeah, like you say, Iago Gerts, I mean, he sort of has nothing to lose now, so he can afford to go for it. And I think we've seen in the second moto in that first lap, that was unbelievable. I think that was him just saying, I have nothing to lose here, I'm going to take risks, because the track was heavily watered and everyone else was just being careful, but he
He was
sent
Ken
it and
Roczen
he
for a lap,
passed.
really,
Yeah,
wasn't he?
I think he'd done something similar, passed six
Yeah.
riders in a lap, and then nobody seen where he went. And but yeah, it's going to be interesting. I mean, at the minute, Geico hasn't really got any pressure, he can just ride flat out. Maybe Adamo and some of the others are maybe thinking about the championship threat, so it is going to be interesting. Once I think Gerts is going to close this gap. But it'll be interesting to see what happens once the gap does close, and maybe Iago does have a bit of pressure. But I'm with you. I think at the minute, if it was a betting man, I would go for Adamo and Gerts. If I had to call it right now, I'd probably say Adamo. But as that gap gets lower and lower and it gets closer and closer, it'll be interesting. And also, Gerts has less margin for error, you would say.
Yeah.
And we've seen him before throw it away here and there. So he is going to have to keep it in two wheels as he does get closer to the championship lead.
So Adamo's never won a moto, isn't that right? That actually shocked me.
Yeah,
So
same with Chuck,
that's
man.
kind of a hurdle to get over to win a title. He'll probably, for me, Lockett. If Adamo can win Lockett, I think that's a big thing mentally for the championship, because after that you have Lommel. Kai De Wulff, who got kind of pretty unlucky, just won his first Grand Prix, then that bad ankle injury, and that's really ruined his momentum. We can see he's still coming back with the pace, but that extra wee bit of confidence he would have had and full health also
Yeah.
is kind of hurt him in the championship. I wouldn't totally rule him out because Lommel's coming. You're gonna have Koonin, Gert, Everts, De Wolf. That's four guys that you would think are gonna battle, could battle for the win in Lommel, and it's about for Adamo and Benistone, you'd think damage limitation. But they're really good on the hard pack the week before in Lockett. So for me, the next two rounds are really, by the end of Lommel, I think we're really gonna see who's really there for the championship. Two
Yeah.
huge contrasting rounds to come, and I'll see who can get through these unscathed and take the maximum points.
Yeah, exactly that. And as you alluded to with Kai De Wulf getting injured just after he'd won, it was the same with Simon Lagenfelder as well.
That's
I don't
true,
think we
good
should
point,
forget about that. He had just went 1-1 because whenever he wins, he always goes 1-1. And then
yeah,
he got injured
he
and he
does.
unfortunately had to miss a few GPs. So he's already back on the podium as well, but obviously his championship threat's gone now. So, but he's another one that can mix it right at the front and sort of take points off guys here or there if they have a bad moto. And I mean, MX2 is exciting because I mean, if you give six or seven guys a start, they can probably win. So
Yeah,
I
maybe
think
even more.
there'll be a lot of
It's
twists and
pretty
turns, I think.
phenomenal class this
Yeah,
year. I think Everts and Adamo and all of Koonin, Ron van den Moostdijk's won motos as well. They've all stepped up maybe quicker than at least we were expecting to become potential race winners every time the gate drops. We saw what Liam done 2, 3 weeks ago. Pretty phenomenal achievement on a family level of the Everts. And I think that's going to relieve pressure on him now. He doesn't have chasing that winner race for the family side of things. He can now just concentrate on doing things his way. And I think we saw in Germany just how much, and the round after, just how much that confidence has helped him. So we do have that seven, eight guys that can all win motos now. You have Sasha, who's learning. He can get a whole shot at any time and run it, mix it up there. Might be a bit scary to watch at times, but you feel like he's going to learn speed as well. So a lot of things going on in that MX2 class. The MXGP class, we thought maybe wasn't going to be that exciting this year or this last weekend. And then Ruben Fernandez and Jeremy Soure showed up on Saturday, banged bars for two or three laps in a row, had a chat after, went out on Sunday and pretty much did the same thing in nearly both motos as well. So that was pretty heart-stopping stuff at times. I think they collided in the air at one point. Contact all there's probably more red paint on the Yamaha and blue paint on the Honda than the mechanics had ever seen. Added to that, you had the Roman Favre Jorge Prado battle, the first moto. We had a bit of a disagreement, actually. I could totally understand why Prado thought Favre was trying to drift out and hit him, which is why he probably got angry and cut across Favre. Even though when you looked at it, what Favre did wasn't actually that bad. But I think from Jorge's point of view, he was still heated when he came off the track, as he mentioned it in the interview. That's why he did it. But at the same time, I don't really think it was that bad whenever you sort of look at the replay. But Prado can't look at a replay when he's wide open, trying to go around the outside of Roman Favre to pass for the lead. So it was almost a bit of a grey area. Prado was kind of right in terms of how he saw it and how he felt. But then when you look at it backwards, it didn't look as bad as what it probably felt to Prado at the time. But still a pretty impressive win for him. I think he's riding smart, but he's still able to take wins now and pass riders early in the race, which he hasn't done so sort of the first few rounds.
Yeah, I mean, on the incident, I can see what Prado thought was happening, but that isn't actually what happens. So in reality, Faber done nothing wrong. So there's that side of it. I'm with Malin there on that one. It got Faber going anyway because
Yeah.
he came out swinging in that. I mean, that first 10 minutes that MXGP moto and the first couple of laps, I think he went
Second
from
moto?
sixth. Yeah, the second
Yeah,
moto.
second
Sorry, I
moto.
think he went from sixth to second to third to second, and then all of a sudden he was on Prado, and then they had that big dice for I'm sure 3 or 4 laps, and then it looked like Favre was sort of stabilized a 5 second gap, and then Prado got it down to 3.5, and you thought the same thing
Yeah, I
that
thought it was
happened in
deja
Moto One
vu.
was going to happen, but I think Favre dug deep there, and unbelievably, I think it's he hasn't won two GPs in a row since like 2016 or something crazy, so. He's won two GPs in a row, and he's actually won as many GPs as Prado has won this year now, believe it or not. But Prado has just been so consistent, and now he knows he doesn't have to take unnecessary risks because he's got over 100 points lead in this championship. So unless something ridiculous happens, you could near say now he has one hand in this championship, just stay injury free for the rest of the season.
Josh Coppins scenario happens or something.
Yeah, exactly that.
And we're at Lockett next, not to tempt fate or anything. But the weird thing for Prado is he took more points this weekend than Fevre. And I think that happened at a couple of early GPs as well, but he didn't get the GP win because the qualifying race doesn't count as accumulated points to the Sunday two motos. So while Fevre won the GP, Prado actually gained points on him overall, but yet it looks in the stats that Fevre has now won as many GPs as Prado. And whenever you look at the season, if those are the only two GPs Prado wins, you'll be like, oh, he only won two GPs, but actually his speed and his points accumulation was as good as or better than a lot of people's over the three races. So it's a bit of an anomaly this year, getting used to that qualifying moto extra 10 points. And I think that qualifying moto really helped Prado even against Herlings, because Herlings was always at that deficit. And that's why he was pushing so hard in Germany to take that win, because he was at a deficit, also thanks to the goggle incident and the foot peg incident. But those qualifying races have really helped Prado this year, and it looks like he's on his way to his first MXGP Premier Class title, and that'll make him a three-time world champ at the age of, what, 21, 22?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, at the start of the season, he was struggling a little bit, but he is definitely getting better and better. And now, obviously, he doesn't have to deal with the Jeffrey Herlings and the Maxime Renault, so he's in a very comfortable position. And yeah, I'm looking forward to Tim Geiser coming back in Lockett, because he's going to come back with nothing to lose. You'll probably see him win 3, 4, 5, 6 GPs before the end of the season, possibly. And then you've obviously got Herlings coming back in Sweden as well. So them guys have nothing to lose, and they'll just be out to win GPs, really. So, but Prado doesn't want to start getting involved with them, because he has a job to do, and that's, you know, winning GPs don't really matter to him at this stage. Just,
yeah, I think just he's smart enough. Because, he reminds me so much of Everts. And Stefan Everts, that is, in his career, where he would take a win if he could. But he was always happy. This sort of Ricky Carmichael, Jeffrey Herlings mentality. Yeah, Crowley as well.
Mm-hmm.
Hop will accept a third, fourth, fifth. We saw it with Prado early in the year. Those times he couldn't make moves, but he didn't risk it all to get a third. He would take a fifth or a sixth. And it's ultimately paid off, because sixth is better than a DNF or an injury. And after 3 years of injury and health issues for Prado, it's probably even more important to him to stay healthy. And I think we're really seeing his fitness improve in mid-season as well. He's attacking more throughout the race, and especially at the end of the race. So at the minute, without jinxing anything, everything's in his hands. He looks probably the best he's looked on a 450, and I think that's a lot to do with fitness and bike setup. Confidence, no doubt, as well. And it's Jorge Prado's championship. But as you say, Fevre's nothing to lose and everything to gain in terms of the championship. Tim Geiger's going to come back just with race wins on his mind once he gets up to speed. Jeffrey Herlings will hopefully be back soon as well. We might get to see Jeffrey Herlings v. Tim Geiger with no championship stress, just pure speed. Who's the fastest? That could be exciting as well. So actually, the MXGP championship might be almost over in terms of excitement with Prado, but the actual racing could only get better from here. And Maxime Renault also might make it back for the end of the year. So individual rounds could prove very exciting in the next and the last eight or whatever it is left for MXGP, even if the title is Prado's to lose, as we said.
Yep, exactly. I'm looking forward to Geiger coming back at Lockett, and then hopefully Herlings can make it back in Sweden. There is a chance he could make it round one round before that, potentially. So all being well, he can come back as soon as possible and mix it at the front. And like you say, those two will just be flat out to win GPs, because the championship doesn't matter to them now. So it could be exciting between Geiger, Herlings. Obviously, Prado and Fevre will still be there too, all being well. Nobody gets injured. So it should be a good end of the season in terms of individual races and GPs.
And maybe Geiger and Herlings should go and give Jet Lawrence some competition, Chase Sexton, for the last round in America as well, which would be all-time viewing, I think, if those four were going at it. But Andy,
Jet and Chase are welcome to come to Mallory Basin too.
They might have SMX
for
championship commitments.
Throw that out the window, MXGP.
You'll have to wait for the donations for that one.
Prep for the donations. Come on ahead, guys.
Right, that's us. That's the wrap-up of World Supercross and a quick look at MXGP and AMA Nationals. This weekend is just AMA, so it's going to seem a bit empty. but it still should be good racing nonetheless at Southwick, and we'll be back soon. Cheers, Andy. Thank you.
Ciao.